Good evening, everybody. Let's start off with cultivating our motivation. So really appreciating the interdependence that we share with all other living beings, and how everything we have, everything we know, all of our talents, our skills, that all of these come due to the kindness of others. And so to really feel that connectedness with others. And a wish to repay that kindness and to honor that connectedness. And seeing that the best way to do this is to cultivate good qualities, purify our mind, attain full enlightenment, so that we'll have the wisdom, compassion, and skillful means to be able to lead others out of the cycle of existence and into liberation and enlightenment. So let's cultivate that motivation. Okay. So last time we were talking a little bit about the difference between conceptual minds and direct perceivers, remember? Okay. And relating this to our topic of emptiness, in that as we progress from wrong view to doubt to correct assumption to correct assumption and inference are both correct conceptual understandings of emptiness, okay? But you're seeing emptiness through the veil of a meaning generality, okay? So it's not a direct perception. So you meditate more on emptiness and clear away the meaning generality, then there's a direct perception of it, okay? And it's at that point that you enter the path of seeing and become an Arya and start to actually eliminate the afflictions from the root. Okay? Okay, so that we're talking about conceptual and non-conceptual minds in the context of talking about the subjects, you know, the consciousness that's perceiving. Now we're going to talk a little bit about the objects of different consciousnesses. Okay, so there's different kinds of objects. There's the appearing object, the observed object, which is also sometimes translated as the focal object, the apprehended object, which is sometimes, Jeffrey translates it as the object of the mode of apprehension, but I think apprehended object is easier to say. And then you have the referent object. Okay? So in terms of a consciousness, the appearing object is what actually appears to the mind. Okay? So in the context of a direct perception, let's say I'm seeing the green of this little mat here. Okay? The appearing object is green. And it's, I have a visual consciousness that's directly perceiving green. Okay. If I close my eyes and I'm thinking about green, what's appearing to my mind is the meaning generality of green. Okay, not actual green. Yeah, but this kind of general image of green. Yeah. The observed object is the actual object that you're looking at. Okay, in this case, it would be green. Yeah, so the observed object, or the focal object, would be green, whether it's for a direct perceiver, like a visual consciousness, or when I'm thinking about green. Okay, the actual object that I'm reflecting on is green, you know? Okay? Then, the apprehended object is the main object with which the mind is concerned. So also, in both of these consciousnesses, it's green. That's the main thing that my mind is concerned with. Yeah? That's the object that's known, the apprehended object. And then the referent object refers just to conceptual consciousnesses, and that's the object that it's you're referring to. So if I'm thinking about green, green is the referent object. Okay. Okay. Now it all sounds kind of, you know, like, okay, what are you doing? But there's a meaning for this. Okay. If we talk about a mind that is grasping at true existence, okay, let's say we're angry and our mind is grasping at true existence. So anger is a conceptual consciousness. It's a mental consciousness. Okay? And it's a conceptual one. It's not a direct perceiver. It's a conceptual consciousness. Okay? The appearing object, when we're angry, and we're grasping at this inherently existent, disgusting, you know, obnoxious person, who's the cause of all my suffering. You know that one? Okay. So the appearing object is an inherently existent person. That's what's appearing to that conceptual consciousness, is an inherently existent person. Is that consciousness accurate in terms of its appearing object? No. So what is appearing to that to that mind does not exist. An inherently existent person does not exist. We're sure seeing one, aren't we? Because there's the appearance of an inherently existent person. That inherently existent person. No. Okay. The focal object or the observed object is that person. Just the person. Okay? That's what our mind is focusing on. That's the, you know, the basic object our mind is concerned with is the person. Yeah. The apprehended object, the basic object that our mind knows, again, is an inherently existent person. So our mind is also mistaken or erroneous in reference to the basic object that it's knowing. And then in this case, the referent object, you know, is also an inherently existent person. So the mind is mistaken in that way. Okay? So by breaking it up into different kinds of objects like this, it's just helping us to take apart a cognition and see that we still are, like, say, focused on the person. Yeah, in one way, the person is the object of our cognition. They're the observed object. But what's appearing to our mind is not the conventionally existent person. What's appearing to our mind is an inherently existent person. That's what our mind is apprehending, is an inherently existent person. And so then you can begin to see why that's considered an erroneous consciousness. Okay, you're in a mistaken consciousness. Hmm? Okay? No? You have no idea what I'm talking about. Okay. Okay, so let's say I'm mad at somebody. Okay? So that person is the basic object I'm concerned with, right? So they're called the observed object or the focal object. That's the basic object. Yeah. But what is appearing to my mind is not just that conventionally existing person. What's appearing to my mind is an inherently existent person. And also, you know, a meaning generality of a person, because it's a conceptual consciousness. So if I have appearing to my mind, you know, first of all, a meaning generality, so it's not a direct perceiver, I'm not directly perceiving the person. And also, an inherently existent person is appearing in my mind. So my mind is not perceiving exactly what's there, is it? It's mistaken. Yeah. What if I am apprehending? What is my mind actually knowing? It's knowing an inherently existent person. That's why I'm getting mad. Because if my mind at that point knew a conventionally existent person, a dependently arising person, or if my mind was seeing a person that appears as like an illusion, if that's what my mind was apprehending, then I wouldn't get angry. But because I'm seeing, you know, this solid, real person who is inherently just, you know, this idiot and the source of my problems, yeah, because that's what I'm apprehending, that triggers my anger. So you see, my mind is mistaken. It's erroneous. I'm not seeing things as they are. Yeah. It's appearing to my mind as something that isn't there. What my mind is apprehending is something that isn't there. Okay. It's like when you take drugs, okay? So when you take drugs, so your visual consciousness is affected. You know, so you're high on acid, and you look in the sky, and there's dragons in the sky, you know? And the dragons all have roses in their mouths. Yeah. Okay? So, what's appearing to your mind is dragons with roses in their mouths. Yeah. Do those things exist? No. Okay, so is your consciousness mistaken? Yes. Okay, so your mind, your visual consciousness is also apprehending, you know, kind of those colors, the colors of the dragon, you know, and the colors of the rose. It's all hallucination, isn't it? Okay. So that, you know, that's the kind of thing that we're getting at.
Can you explain that again with something that, an object that you're actually, that's appearing correctly?
Okay, with an object that's appearing correctly? Okay, so I look at the grapes. So the appearing object is the, to my visual consciousness, is the purple of the grapes. Yeah, the purple of the grapes is also the observed object. It's the, or the focal object, it's the apprehended object. And in its case of a visual consciousness, there's no referent object, because that only applies to conceptual consciousnesses. Okay. But let's say I'm sitting here, you know, and I'm supposed to be giving teachings, but instead I'm dreaming about grapes. Okay. You know, I'm sitting here meditating beforehand, dreaming about grapes. Yeah. So what's appearing to my mind, I mean, I should have a better distraction than grapes, shouldn't I, you know? This shows the level of how stupid our distractions are, aren't they? You go and talk about them and they're not even interesting to somebody else. You could have an interesting, you know, distraction. Okay, so I'm sitting here distracted about grapes. You know, thinking about grapes. So the appearing object is a meaning generality of grapes. Not the real grapes. The real grapes are not appearing to my mind. The meaning generality is. Yeah. And the meaning generality, remember, is just it's a composite of my different experiences in perceiving grapes. So I'm putting them all together. Yeah, I'm making a meaning generality of it. Yeah. Okay. So what's the meaning generality is the appearing object to my mental consciousness. The focal object or the observed object, so the grapes. Yeah. The apprehended object is the meaning generality. No, the apprehended object is the grapes. Yeah. And so is the referent object. Yeah. But the appearing object is the meaning generality. Okay?
In that case, it's what the observed
object.
It's not the meaning generality of the observed object?
No, the grapes are the observed object. Yeah. Okay? So it's just showing us, you know, different ways to look at perception, you know, so that we can describe what's going on and to see how in some way, you know, you could be, you know, your focal object is the grapes, but, you know, the appearing object is the meaning generality, and you're confusing the meaning generality, which is the appearing object, with the actual grapes, you know? And so when you do that, that's one of the reasons why you can generate a lot of emotions about those grapes, because you think they're really there, but they're nowhere to be seen. They aren't around. Okay? Okay. So this will, you know, just, it'll all get tied together, you know, at some point. But you just kind of need this background to it. Okay. So now we're going to talk about how ignorance grasps its object, and this might become a little bit clearer here. Okay. There's a very beautiful quote from the Questions of Upali Sutra that I think I'll begin with here, that talks about it. And here it says, "Here the various mind-pleasing blossoming flowers and attractive, shiny, supreme golden houses have no inherently existent maker at all. They are posited through the power of thought. Through the power of thought, the world is imputed." Okay? So we may see very beautiful things, a beautiful palace, a chalet, even a golden house. Yeah. How did those things come into existence? Was there an inherently existent creator, an inherently existent maker of those things? No. Okay. These things did not originate because there was some kind of supreme being who created them, who is inherently existent, okay? They also didn't originate out of some inherently existent cause, you know, because something that is inherently existent can't change. Why can't it change? Because if something is inherently existent, it exists independent of other factors. Something that doesn't depend on other factors can't depend on causes and conditions. If something doesn't depend on causes and conditions, it can't change. So it can't be created, it can't go out of existence. It must be permanent. Okay? So if it's inherently existent, it must be permanent. Are trees and flowers and all these things permanent? No. Okay. Could they be created by something that's permanent? No. Because in order for creation to happen, there has to be change. Yeah. So this is actually one of the refutations of a creator. Because if there is an absolute creator that is independent of all other factors, then that creator, you know, is permanent, and something that is permanent cannot create, because the whole process of production requires change. Yeah? I mean, if you make a salad, you're a different person than before you made the salad, aren't you? Making the salad changes you. So, okay? So, you know, there's no inherently existent maker, whether it's a creator being of the universe or whether it's some kind of inherently existent causes like the material that the things are made out of. Yeah. Okay. But then the quote says, okay, there's no inherently existent maker at all. They are posited through the power of thought. Through the power of thought, the world is imputed. Okay. So things are posited, or they're established. They come into existence by the power of thought, by the power of term and concept. Okay, so things are dependently designated. They don't exist on their own. Okay? So, there's some simple examples that we can look at to see how things are dependently designated. It gives us some kind of an idea, but you know, at least on a beginning stage. So, this is an election year, so they always use the example of precedent. It's a very good example on election year, okay? So, somebody who is going to be president, yeah, or somebody who is president, they're only the president because we have agreed to give them the label president, and we have the conception of what a president is and the name president, and we attribute that to that person, and they fulfill the conditions, and therefore we call them precedent. Yeah. In other words, they aren't a precedent under their own power, independent of other things. They're only precedent because we give them the name precedent. There is nothing presidential inside of them. I could make a lot of political comments at this point, but I will restrain myself, okay, about the current one, who, thank goodness, is merely labeled and won't be merely labeled president next year. Okay, who will be merely labeled president next year? We're not sure of, and, you know, people may have different wishes and different, you know, opinions about that. But you see, that person who, you know, a year from now will be called president, now isn't called president. Yeah? Okay. So whether it's Clinton or Obama or McCain or whoever it is, yeah, then, you know, they are only labeled president after there's an election and we have, you know, all agreed that that label is suitable to give to that person. Yeah. What was interesting was 8 years ago, remember with the confusion of the election, Al Gore won the popular vote and George Bush got the Electoral College, and then there was all the thing about the ballots in Florida. What the whole thing was all about was who gets the label. Wasn't it? The whole thing is, you know, who is going to be the basis of designation of the label president. That's what all of that was about. So we have different rules in this country, and whether we like the rules or not, I personally think the Electoral College should be, you know, abandoned. But whether we like them or not, we follow the rules. And, you know, we listen to the Supreme Court, whether you think they have any I should be polite. You know, we listen to their decisions, whether we like them or not. So then, you know, by common consensus, we decided to give somebody that label. Hmm? Okay. So things exist by being merely labeled. Yeah. So we have to have a concept, we have to have a term, and then depending upon, you know, the meaning that we've given to that term and what that concept is of what that term refers to, that person has to be able to fulfill the, you know, those or that object, that basis has to be able to fulfill those functions. Okay? So things exist by being merely labeled. Okay? So the I, you know, what we call I, is something that exists by being merely labeled independent upon the five aggregates. So the form aggregates, which is the body, and then we have feelings, discrimination, conditioning factors, and primary consciousnesses, or primary minds. Okay. So on the basis of those four are often called mind. So on the basis of body and mind, the collection of the five aggregates, then we impute person. Okay, so the person exists by being merely labeled. Mm-hmm. When we see somebody, yeah, or we're thinking about somebody, yeah, so-and-so, okay, Sam is the, you know, the observed object of our thought about Sam. Yeah, what's appearing to our mind is a meaning generality of Sam. If we start getting angry at Sam, then we also have an inherently existent Sam appearing to our mind. You know? And then that's going to open the door for a lot of problems. Okay. When we're grasping an inherent existence, or put it this way, we label on the basis of the collection of aggregates, we label the person, but not being satisfied of that that is a person just because we've labeled the person, we imbue it with more solid existence than just what's referred to by that label or what exists by being merely labeled. And instead we think that there's something inside that person that makes them that. Okay, so there's some real person there. So this is where we start grasping an inherent existence. Okay. So even when we think of ourselves, you know, this feeling that we walk around with all the time of, I'm just here. You know, there's me. Did you go through a point when you were younger saying, who am I? Yeah, who am I? What is this I? All the time I'm thinking me, 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 but what is this I that I'm thinking about all the time? Okay. And it so often feels like it's something very real. It doesn't feel like it's the body. It doesn't feel like it's the mind. But there's something personal about it. Do you get what I mean? Yeah? I mean, if you look, the body is just, you know, I mean, it's all this organic matter. There's nothing very personal about organic matter, is there? It's just organic matter. Then the mind. Yeah, okay, there's visual consciousness, auditory consciousness, there's mental factors, there's feeling, there's discrimination, there's attention, intention, there's love, there's hatred, all these different mental factors. But they're kind of impersonal too, aren't they? They're just different mind states that come up. There's nothing personal about just this mental state or a thought or a mood or something like that, is there? It's just a mental event. But somehow, when we put the organic substance and the mental events together, it seems like there's somebody there, doesn't there? There's somebody there. You know, there's something extra that comes in there that isn't the vegetable goo and it's not the mental states, but there's something there from its own side, inside of that body and mind, somewhere floating around in it, that's a person, a real person, something personal. Yeah, do you get what I mean? You know how we make, I mean, there's something personal in there. So if there's something personal, then, oh, then I can fall in love with that person. Ah, or I can hate that person. You know, vegetable goo, you're not going to, you know, isn't going to evoke such strong feelings as love and hate, is it? A mental state, a visual consciousness. Mental consciousness. Bad mood. Mental factor of intention. Mental factor of attention. Do those evoke many strong feelings in you? No. But a person. Oh. A person. That's something special, isn't it? Okay, so we feel like there's something special there. So when we look at ourselves, that's the way we feel, isn't it? There's something that's me in here. That's not the body, it's not the mind, but it's not totally separate from the body and mind either. It's somewhere in the body and mind that's something special. It's me. Yeah. You know what I mean? Okay. So we really feel that. But what in the world is it? You know, if it's not the body and it's not the mind and it's not something different from them, what in the world is it? Yeah. So there was just a conventional existent person that exists by being merely designated independence upon the collection of body and mind, you know, so that you don't have to say, you know, that body that is, you know, 5'8", you know, that has inside, you know, the 6 consciousnesses and right now is having the feeling of unpleasant, you know, is walking down the street. You just say, Joe's walking down the street, okay? Or I'm walking down the street, or Susan's walking down the street. Yeah, it's a kind of a shorthand for that whole thing, you know. And Susan exists because we've put the body and mind together and given it the label Susan. The person exists. You know, it's a shorthand, it's convenient. That's the conventionally existent person. But when we start thinking, oh, there's something special in there that's Susan. There's something special in there that's Joe. You know, then, you know, Joe and Susan are appearing independent of the aggregates, aren't they? There's something that's this independent special person there. And then, of course, once we think there's that person in there, then our mind goes into what's called inappropriate attention. Yeah. There's a permanent person. There's a beautiful person. There's a person who's going to give me happiness. Yeah. There's a person who loves me. There's a person that I have a special connection with from past lives. We're soulmates. And we start fabricating this whole thing. And then what comes up? Attachment. You know? And what we're attached to is a mental image of a non-existent person. Okay? The observed object is Joe or Susan. Okay. But what's appearing to our mind is like, you know, we've done our creative writing class and we have all this stuff and we have all of our reasons too, you know, because we're soulmates from a previous life. I had a Buddhist friend say that to me about his wife, and I was going to go, what are you talking about, you know? And he didn't use the word soulmates, but he said, you know, I'm sure we knew each other in previous lives and we had this special connection. And the whole way he was talking was as if there was an inherently existent him and an inherently existent her, you know. And okay, maybe you have a karmic connection from previous life. That's one thing. But, you know, this kind of fated, predetermined thing because you're both inherently existent. You know, that's not Buddhism, okay? But we can sure invent it, yeah, and that's what our mind does. Yeah. And so the same thing, you know, so one month your soulmates, and then, you know, they leave their dirty clothes on the floor and they don't take out the garbage and they forget to buy you the peanut butter and they're in a bad mood and then anger arises. Again, because you were grasping an inherently existent person. Remember, there's something personal in there. It's not just a merely labeled person. There's a real person in there. And then our inappropriate attention, you know, they forgot the peanut butter. I think they're passive aggressive. You know, this has been happening a lot in our marriage when I ask them to do things. And they forget, you know, and his dirty socks, I really don't like that, you know, who does he think he is, his maid, that I'm going to pick up his dirty socks and wash his bowl, and, you know, find his car keys when he can't remember where he put them, you know, and so again, inappropriate attention starts fabricating a permanent person, a person that is the cause of my suffering, a despicable person, a stupid person, everything, you know, inappropriate attention goes on, it fabricates this whole thing, and then of course we get upset, and anger comes, okay? So here we see how grasping at inherent existence produces the afflictions, which produces the karma. Because you have the grasping at inherent existence, and then you have the inappropriate attention that elaborates and, you know, makes up stories, which gives rise to an affliction, depending on the story you made up. Okay? And when you have the affliction in your mind, then if you have mental actions, you know, ruminating about the person, oh, they're so wonderful, how can I just bump into them accidentally? I've got a plan on how to bump into them accidentally. Or they're so disgusting, how can I hurt their feelings? You know, so that's the non-virtue of either covetousness or ill will. Okay, that's the mental non-virtue. And then that gives rise to verbal things. So you create non-virtue of, you know, verbal negative actions. Or we do something. So we have physical negative actions, physical karma. And then, you know, that is sets the stage for future rebirths. You know, if we did something, you know, quite a strong karma, then it sets the stage for future rebirth. And then when that karma ripens, you know, powie, we get thrown into another body. Okay? So, you can see that the thing is, the things exist by being merely labeled, but when we aren't content with merely labeling them and think that instead there's something in them that makes them them, yeah, then that produces all sorts of afflictions and other things. Yeah. So that's why we want to abandon the ignorance. And the way the ignorance is apprehending the object is mistaken. Okay? Because the object, you know, if I'm seeing an inherently just an external person, the object, the focal object is the person. But what I'm apprehending is an inherently existent person. So my mind's mistaken. Or when I think of myself, you know, I want to be happy. So I want to get what I want. Okay. Yeah. There is a conventional person there that exists by being merely labeled in dependence upon the aggregates. But we forgot that we were labeled person. And instead we think that there's something that's really me in there. And that real me needs happiness. Needs happiness, you know, and wants happiness, and, you know, doesn't need suffering and doesn't want suffering. And, okay, and so then we have, again, more afflictions. So the way that the mind grasping an inherent existence is apprehending the object is mistaken. Yeah, there is a conventional person, me. But my apprehended object, my referent object, an inherently existent me, that doesn't exist at all. Okay? So this is, you know, we start with just trying to understand this conceptually a little bit, but it can be very helpful in our practice. Like this morning we were talking at the Abbey after breakfast about anger. You know, and when we're angry, you know, to just stop and say, my mind is under the influence of afflictions right now. I mean, how often do we do that? We don't. Yeah. We might say, I'm angry, but we don't go, my mind is under the influence of afflictions, or my mind is grasping at inherent existence, or what my mind apprehends right now, an inherently existent thing that I'm mad at, does not exist. Do we ever think that? No. Imagine how powerful that would be if we really got it. The object that is appearing to my mind, this inherently existent person, the object that my mind is apprehending, grasping at, this inherently existent person, does not exist at all. Totally non-existent. Okay. Now, we have to be careful here. The inherently existent person is totally non-existent. Is the person non-existent? No. The person exists. Yeah, there's a person there. If I'm hallucinating a person, then there's no person there. Okay. But if there's a person there, there's a person there. Conventionally it's just a person. But that's not what I'm apprehending. I'm apprehending an inherently existent one that doesn't exist. Okay. So you see here now why this thing about objects is important? Yeah? Because the person exists. We're not going to nihilism and saying the person doesn't exist. But what my mind is apprehending when I'm grasping at true existence, whether it's a truly existent me or a truly existent other person, that truly existent one doesn't exist. But that person exists. Okay? So that's how the thing of objects relates to what we're talking about. And that's how it can be really helpful to us, you know, when we're under the power of affliction, to say, my mind is perceiving a non-existent object. Okay? So whether we're really angry and we're perceiving this person that is 100% totally negative, or we're overwhelmed by attachment and we're perceiving a person that is 100% perfectly wonderful, our mind is not perceiving things as they are. The object that our apprehended object doesn't exist. There's a person there. But there's not a real person with all those fantastic qualities that I'm imputing on them. Okay? Okay. Okay, so Nagarjuna said, here's another quote. When thoughts of the self and that which belongs to the self, so here he's referring to inherently existent self, are extinguished in regard to internal and external things, grasping will stop, and through its extinction, birth will be extinguished. Okay? So when thoughts of a self and that which belongs to a self, you know, thoughts of an inherently existent self and an inherently existent mind or inherently existent phenomena that belong to the self, when that is extinguished, okay, then grasping will stop because grasping needs inherent existence to hold on to. And when grasping stops, grasping is the ninth link of the 12 links of dependent arising. When grasping stops, then birth stops. Because without grasping, karma can't ripen that throws you into another samsaric rebirth. Okay? Okay. So, let me just get that. Oh, okay. So, just to go on, when the object of love and the object of attachment, yeah, a very good thing, is sentient beings, okay? Because sentient beings conventionally exist. So sentient beings are the observed object of love, when we have love in our mind. They're the observed object of attachment, when we have attachment in our mind. Okay? Appropriate attention, you know, as opposed to inappropriate attention, appropriate attention sees sentient beings as kind, as overwhelmed by suffering, as having afflicted minds that create the cause of suffering, even though what they want is happiness. So that's appropriate attention. An appropriate way to hold sentient beings. If you hold sentient beings like that, then love and compassion arise for them. Here's a sentient being under the influence of afflictions and karma, wanting conscious happiness, having unhappiness, getting reborn again and again and again. Okay, so that kind of way of paying attention is appropriate attention. And it brings on love and compassion. But when we have inappropriate attention, same object, sentient being, but we're going, oh, they're so wonderful. They have this quality in them that's unique to them and so special that really resonates with me. And they've always had that quality, and they will always have that quality, and they'll always show that quality to me, and I will always feel happy when they show that quality to me, because that's who they really are. You know, this is what happens, okay, isn't it? That's attachment, isn't it? We've all fallen into attachment before. So do you see how this works? Okay. So, we have different kinds of minds, different kind of, we can call it innate awarenesses, innate minds. So, some of our innate awarenesses apprehend objects that do conventionally exist, like sentient beings that are under the influence of ignorance and karma. Okay? And so those are consciousnesses, let's say like love and compassion, and, you know, if we're apprehending apples or oranges, those are, you know, innate consciousnesses that are not mistaken and their objects exist conventionally. Then there are other kinds of innate consciousnesses that apprehend inherent existence and that have all this inappropriate attention going on. And those objects, yeah, are being misapprehended. And though the existence of those apprehended objects can be refuted by reasoning. Okay? So when our mind is, you know, making this, either this person that's 100% wonderful or a person that's 100% awful, okay, either one of those can be refuted by reasoning. And that's what happens when we sit down and we start to apply an antidote to either attachment or anger, is, you know, we look and, you know, our mind saying that everything this person does is wrong. Well, is that true? No, that's exaggeration. Or our mind is saying this person is so wonderful and they're always going to bring me happiness. Is that true? No, it's an exaggeration. So those objects can be refuted by reasoning, even at the level of refuting the object that inappropriate attention is, you know, doing. But even on a deeper level, since, you know, when we have anger or attachment in our mind that's grasping a true existence of that person, then also a truly existent person can be refuted by reasoning. Because when we look at that person that we think is, you know, that we either hate or are madly in love with, is there a person in there? Okay, in that vegetable goo, in that collection of consciousnesses and mental events, is there something personal? No. Okay. That can be refuted by reasoning, because there's nothing personal that is either the body or mind or separate from the body and mind. So that pertains to the other person, that pertains to us. Okay? So actually, here's a good point to explain that the different kind of selves and self-graspings and selflessnesses. Because self is a very tricky word. Self sometimes means person and self sometimes means true existence. Okay? So we can talk of the self of phenomena and the self of persons. When we divide it like that, phenomena means everything that's not a person. So principally the aggregates here. So if I am grasping at my body is truly existent, okay, that's the grasping at the self of phenomena, or that self-grasping of phenomena. And I'm thinking that the phenomena, my body, has a self, in other words, is truly existent. Okay? So that's the self of phenomena. The self-grasping at phenomena is the mind that holds that self of phenomena really exists. And the selflessness of phenomena is the lack of true existence of, in this case, my body. Okay? So that's regarding phenomena. Then regarding the person, yeah, what's merely labeled in dependence upon the phenomena, the self of person means that a truly existent person. The self-grasping at persons refers to the mind that is grasping at the existence of a truly existent person. And the selflessness of persons means the absence of a truly existent person. Okay. Within that, when we're talking about persons, there's also another little subdivision, which means other and myself. Okay? When we talk, when I'm grasping at myself as being truly existent, okay, that grasping at myself as truly existent is also the mental factor of view of the transitory collection. Okay, remember this one, the Tibetan word is jitta? Okay, so that is a type of self-grasping at persons. Self-grasping at persons and view of the transitory collection are not exactly the same, because view of transitory collection only applies to when I'm grasping at myself to truly exist. When I think all of you guys are truly existent, from my perspective, that's self-grasping at persons, but it's not view of the transitory collection. It's only when I'm grasping myself as truly existent. That's the view of the transitory collection. And the view of the transitory collection is the real troublemaker. That's the one that when we talk about the 12 links that describe how we get born in samsara, that's the one that's the first link, the link of ignorance. Okay? So, I know that there's a lot of terms here. There's a lot of new concepts. But even if you don't get everything completely clearly, just trying to familiarize yourself with the words, trying to get the concepts, is very, very good, because if you spend some time, you know, if you take notes and study them, or if you go back and listen to the teaching again and again and again, you know, and get these things, then you become more familiar with the material, and then next time you hear it, it will make more sense. Okay? So it's the same with everything we do. We have to learn repeatedly and get familiar with the terms, familiar with the concepts. Okay? But also, there's something in here that we can apply quite directly to our lives too. You know? And I think when I was describing, you know, the vegetable goo and the mental states, and is there something personal about them? I think you got that, didn't you? Mm-hmm. You know, you can kind of get that. Well, try this week, when you're either looking at other people or looking at yourself, when you feel this strong feeling of there being a person there, to just say, vegetable goo and mental states, what is the person? Yeah. Is there a real person in this vegetable goo and among these mental states? Can I find it? And then you kind of see how there's a difference, isn't there, between when you look at somebody and you see, oh, they're just a conglomeration of vegetable goo and mental states that is being labeled person. You can begin to see there's a difference between that and when you think that there's something unique that's really a person inside there. Okay, so you can begin to see the difference between those two things. Yeah, so that's good, because then you're getting some idea of what the object of negation is. Yeah. That thing in there that's really that person. So maybe time for one question?
Yes.
Is the observed object the mere labeled object?
Is the appearing object
the observed
object? Yeah, the observed object is the merely labeled object. Or the object exists that exists by being merely labeled. Yeah.
And can you in any way explain the difference between the appearing object and the apprehended object?
Okay, between the appearing
object.
Yeah, well, except the appearing object is talking more about what is appearing to our mind, and the apprehended object is talking more about what we're holding, what we're actually knowing. Yeah. So it's a little bit of a different slant. Let me see if I can think of...
Like an arhat. Does an arhat have the appearance of true existence, but they don't apprehend it as true?
Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah. So an arhat, you know, or an arya, when they come out of their meditative equipoise on emptiness, you know, they'll have the appearance of true existence, but they won't grasp it as truly existing. Other questions? Yeah.
I think I somewhat understand the first three, but I don't have any clue what you mean by a reference.
Okay, reference object is referring particularly to conceptual consciousnesses. Okay, let me go back here and get if we have a definition here. Okay, in conceptual consciousnesses, the referent object is the same as the apprehended object. Okay? But it's just another way of accentuating the difference between when there is a conceptual consciousness and when there isn't.
Because when there isn't a conceptual consciousness, there's no referent object.
Right. Okay, good. So we can dedicate.